أيوه
Hello and welcome to a truly special episode of the Offside Musings podcast. My name is Oke Ndibe, speaking from location in Nigeria. And then I welcome you on behalf of my co-host and partner, Emeka Onyagwa, who is in Biden's country, the United States of America. So Emeka, you're welcome to today's episode. I'm sure you're excited.
It's always a great it's a Supreme Court woke up overnight and gave us a lovely decision. I think they gave us a one-day notice. They gave the people that care a one-day notice.
Yes.
And then
yes,
they showed up and delivered their judgment as expected. If anybody was expecting something different, I don't know if I should tell you sorry that you're disappointed. but I've got no idea what to tell you.
Oh, so, by the way, I can't see your image, so I don't know if your image is not there.
Oh, it's there, don't worry. It's just that's what we're going to be having network issues because of obviously the state of Nigeria's
Wi-Fi. Yes.
The whole story, man, on his own. So
it's interesting. I mean, what you just said, I think, summarizes the mood in the country. Everybody simply said, well, we didn't expect different. You know, it would have been good if the Supreme Court had surprised Nigerians. But everybody said this was what they expected. And of course, I think that most people also felt that the Supreme Court was in a particular hurry. One hurry had to do with a technical issue that one of the presiding justices was due to retire in a couple of days after the judgment. But there was also the strong perception that the Supreme Court wanted to beat the deadline or to beat the release. Expected release of FBI files, dossier on Bola Ahmed Tinubu. I don't know if that was the sense you got.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I was expecting, I said they would either elongate it as long as things would work in their favor. That's what I said before. They would either keep it as long as necessary and hope everybody forgets, or they'll find some way to make sure that they deliver their judgment in a way it doesn't matter. So I think they realized the stakes are high. If you've gone through the logic of any of their other judgments, which they just use technicalities all through, it doesn't make any sense. And there's a good chance at this point in time that the FBI files are coming out. They've been petitioned. They're going to start coming out from tomorrow. Tinubu has, I think, over 200,000 files, and what they're going to release based on the specific query by the interested parties is about 36,000 files, little by little. I think 600 files per month.
Okay, so yeah, because I think they're going to release 500 pages per month.
About
5 months. Yes.
Yeah.
So here is being in Nigeria, the sense that I got, as I said, was everybody. In fact, on my flight from Lagos to the southeast 2 days ago, a big discussion broke out inside the aircraft about the Supreme Court judgment, and some people felt, well, this was what they expected, right? But there were also mumblings by some people that the game was rigged against the petitioners, the Labour Party and the People's Democratic Party. And that, in a sense, what happened is that once INEC chooses who they want to announce as the winner of an election, that there isn't enough time for the petitioning parties to gather the kind of data, the kind of material with which to persuade the courts that the elections have been rigged. So that in a lot of ways, already in the Electoral Act and in the way in which the Constitution allows for petitions against the results. Therefore, a national election like the presidency that already no party which is dissatisfied with the result of an election has enough time to put together polling booth from polling booth, a polling booth by polling booth evidence that the election had been rigged. Quite apart from the fact, obviously, that a lot of people saw what you might call the evidence of their own eyes. I'm sure that you followed a statement by Babasir Lawal, who clearly came out and said Peter Obi won that election and won soundly.
Yeah, look, I mean, there are so many ways to look at it. I don't think it needs so much legal analysis, but the first way to see it is if justice is not seen to be done, and it's not done, it's just what it is. It's not, you can hide behind whatever one wants. The other school of thought has been, hey, there's not enough time. Oh, making excuses. Oh, but time is not there. The Electoral Act is not there, or the fact that the opposition party should have just coalesced and fought the case, and then they would have won. The reality, and again, people are entitled to their opinions. I've got nothing against people that have those opinions. I just think you're either trying to be naive, you're trying to be oblivious, or you're just simply trying to be evil. When you think that way, the reality is it's not a matter of time. It's not a matter of gathering evidence. It's maybe the coping mechanism for some people. Like, well, if they had more time to gather evidence, that the reality is the system is horribly constructed. It's terribly constructed. It's once you've captured state power like you have, and you want to remain in power, you will remain in power as long as you want. Jonathan maybe is the exception to some degree, and I think I think over the last couple of years, I've always told this story about Obasanjo and how during his first term, I realized that this whole system was a waste of time. And then when he wanted to do the second term, I just and it's I just I've come to realize that the biggest fault of Obasanjo is making people believe in the system. That's it. As a book, he was an imperial president, and he knew that the system was flawed. His problem, and I've come to this last year, I've been thinking that his problem was he knew and he was under the right path. The third term thing was what derailed it. He should have done what Vladimir Putin did in Russia. He served two terms. Realize that Russia needs strong leadership. Fault him or not, there's a whole, we could go into, that's a whole different conversation. But he didn't want to create just a straight up strong man. So he amended the constitution and supported what's his name to become president, Medvedev to become president, who was going to be differential to him when he wanted to come back. He was going to be popular enough to be elected. After the amendment of the constitution and after restructuring this thing, yeah, you can say Putin is this thing. It depends on your values. Western people tend to put at the top of the values unbridled freedom. Most countries don't, and I don't really think unbridled freedom should be on the top of every country's list. I'm not in that camp. If you're in that camp, I perfectly understand your this thing, but that's the way Russia played it out, and that's the way specifically Putin played it out. That's the way Obasanjo should have played it out back then. Ever since then, all we've got in Nigeria is just worse after worse after worse, and we are here now, which is worse than any other thing that we've seen. Unless you are in a camp of either oblivion or you just wanted the outcome of what you have now, unless that. But if not, I don't see this whole debate of Supreme Court this, Supreme Court that, they didn't deliver justice. And if you think, if anybody feels otherwise, so be it.
No, so you've just made a very important point, the point about perception. Okay. It's one thing for justice to be done. It's another thing for people to perceive that there's even a commitment to the doing of justice in any polity. I think that Nigeria, the Nigerian judiciary, has sunk so low in the esteem, in the estimation of the public, that ordinarily people no longer expect much in terms of any fidelity to doing justice from the judiciary. And then you find a case where the judgment by the original originating tribunal, the presidential election petition tribunal, where you have a lot of grounds that were canvassed by the petitioners, and the courts made rulings that were absurd on their face. The court disregarded some witnesses because they said these are witnesses who are members of the respective petitioning parties. And yet, they did not make the same pronouncement when it came to Tinubu's witnesses who were members of the APC. That's one. And when you have a case where Peter Obi approached the court, I think, with 13 on 13 grounds, and the court summarily would dismiss 10 of those grounds. And in Atiku's case, that he came to the court with 27 grounds, and the court removed 15 just from the starting block. So this is, I think, reminiscent, or it's reminiscent of a game in which the referee orders that more than half of the field of one side should be on the sidelines and not play, right? And when the two sides are evenly matched, right? Already you are guaranteeing the outcome of the game. But in this case, where Tinubu's party has the money, has the exclusive monopoly on the means of official violence, they have the police behind them, they have the DSS behind them, they have all kinds of organs of state power. What you're doing essentially is to award the game where it is like a professional football team playing against a team of kindergartners, and then you remove half of the players for the kindergartner team. And so the perception here, there's this Supreme Court justice who just retired, and he offered a very damning assessment of the court, a very damning assessment of the court. He showed his sense of shame at some of the rulings that the Supreme Court has come up with lately, whether it's in the Lawan case where the president of Eswa, president of the Senate, was not a candidate at all in an election, but the courts basically declared him a candidate, okay? Or in the case of Imo State, where Hope Uzodinma came all the way from fourth in an election to being installed in the governor's seat by the Supreme Court. So the Nigerian Supreme Court truly is suffering a crisis of an image crisis, if you like, a crisis of confidence, that there isn't much of any faith on the part of Nigerians that this is even a serious court that takes seriously its mandate.
I mean, you've laid out a lot of those reasonings. I mean, we could lay out so many that just don't make any logical sense. They throw it away for technicalities here and there. The list is endless. Criminal convictions are not convictions, they're convictions against your bank accounts. Certificates can be printed. You can claim to go to a university, and university can't even certify you went there, and then they try to twist the judgments, the depositions, and then even say, "Hey, look, man, a Tinubu went there, and anybody can print a certificate. So you can just go to your house, bring out your printer, and print that you went to university of wherever, as long as you." Are you still there?
Hello? Hello? Hello?
You go through all these things where somebody says a forfeiture is not a criminal conviction. People that had said before it was, but obviously now it's not. Or double nomination is a problem. You could go through them all if you want to. They had their mind. They know who their paymasters are, and they were going to deliver on their paymasters. As far as I know, as far as I'm concerned, as far as things work in Nigeria, that's the way it works. If you choose to be more on the side of like this, that, it's the way it works here or whatever. It's entitled to your own opinion, whoever that is. However, the reality is paymasters, elections are paid, bought, and bought in Nigeria. That's just the reality. That I don't even. For those that believe that there will have been a different outcome if maybe the other opposition parties merged, I personally do not believe so.
No.
I do not see. I think they would have eked out a even if you had some of the people that clearly delivered their states, like Wike delivered his states. Even if Wike didn't deliver his state, they would have arrived at their math, irrespective of it's money playing its biggest role, and that's just again. It's
Yeah,
you can go through all that, but it is what it is.
So as you said, so there's this so suddenly the courts were reluctant. I think the first court that looked at the case refused to entertain the issue of Tinubu's certificate problem on account that the party that obtained the document was not an interested party in the election petition. Now, Atiku goes to the US and obtains evidence that Tinubu's story, Tinubu's educational credentials had so many question marks. And the Supreme Court simply said, oh, that was not at play in the originating court, so that they were not going to entertain that. So as you said, you find the courts making really an ass of the law, making a fool of the very idea of the judiciary. When you find a court that goes out of his way, okay, to excuse criminality because a given outcome must be delivered, then a country is setting itself up for big trouble. So I was speaking with a friend of mine a few days about the Supreme Court ruling, and he made the point that if you buy a car and the seller gives you a receipt for the car, okay, a legitimate receipt showing you paid for the car and the car was delivered to you, but you somehow lose that receipt and then you go and print a different receipt, okay, and you sign it. If you are hauled before a court and you show, well, in this receipt that I printed, I put in the exact amount that I paid. I put in all the documentation, the VIN number of the car. But it can be established that what you purported to be the official receipt for the car, even though all the details are correct, was not the one that the seller issued to you. You cannot be accused of having stolen the car, right? But you can be accused legitimately and credibly of forging a document, an official document. So here is Tinubu who forged his degree certificate from Chicago State University. There is a question of whether it's his or not, okay? But he signs a signature there. he signs a signature which was not signed by the person authorized by the university. It was signed by somebody that Tinubu hired, right? And somehow the courts had no problems with that. And yet, so what kind of country do we have? Can you imagine then if a lowly civil servant is accused of forging a legal document and he quotes the precedent that the Supreme Court of Nigeria has established, that you can actually, once the details of a case sort of align, you can issue yourself an official document and sign it, you know, to say nothing of the fact that nothing has been settled, you know, nothing has been settled about Tinubu's name, Tinubu's age, Tinubu's educational credentials, the fact that Tinubu has claimed to have graduated from a secondary school that was not in existence at the purported time that he graduated from it. It's almost as if the Supreme Court set out, the two courts that have, you know, looked at this issue, it's almost as if they set out to make Nigeria an object of mockery in the world.
Yeah. I mean, I think we could always take a look at this issue from 20 different ways. For those who are surprised, or for those who... There was a speech by Rotimi Amaechi the other day, where somebody like Aisha Yusufu, I think she described it appropriately, carrot and sticks. He's now the one coming with carrots, and they were asking him why. And I would have loved to just play it for 4 minutes. They were asking him why he didn't talk. He's like, look, nothing happened. If you walk into a house in Nigeria and kill a man's wife and his kids and perform some of the most heinous acts you could find, next day nothing happens. Everybody, the man wakes up, and in fact, people will even blame the man himself, to be honest. it's funny, but it is the truth. That's the way nothing happens. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter. It's playing out publicly. The other day I was at the abattoir, I was telling you out here, and my Nigerian friend was making fun of whoever we're making fun of the Tinubu thing, because to others they might be like, yeah, they like the coup in Nigeria, that the power is now with the people, but look at Nigeria. I'm like, yeah. So it's like it doesn't, and it comes back to the question I've sat down to ask. It's like, you know, when does anything break in Nigeria, really? Are people going to correct the mistakes of, you could say, okay, the current mistake is from 1999. Mm-hmm. Are people ever going to try and correct that? The wider symptom is, why is it that in the modern era, black societies have a problem creating a functional state? Why? So far, so good. That's a bigger question to ask. But in this particular instance, we're sitting down, we're taking a look at this situation where, you know, I don't... When people say that, I don't even know what to tell them. It's like, look, man, I don't know what you're expecting. And for the people that will come again, I want to tell you, well, we're going to re-strategize in 4 years. It's like, bros, please. I don't know. I've found it challenging in the past to articulate how stupid that ideology is. And it's comical year in, year out. Mm-hmm. And it's been going on since 2003, in my opinion. Yeah. So when somebody comes and starts talking about, well, you know, you have to re-strategize, again, it's one of three things. Either you're extremely naive, or you decide to become oblivious, like most Nigerians are, bury their heads in the sand and blame the people that are suffering, the victims of the crime, the everyday persons out there in Nigeria. Or the third option, you're extremely evil. Mm. You have some level of inherent evil inside you. You're telling people in 4 years it will be different. In which way, shape, or does this lead to any difference? You have these same people who, in the last, since 1999, I mean, look at Ewike. His wife is a judge. He's been, I think he started from local government chairman to commissioner to this thing. Same thing with an Amaechi that's coming out, starts from local government chairman to speaker of the house to this thing to minister. And this one guy is drawing pension and resources from all
at
these
so many
positions while
different levels.
contributing. You're telling people like, you know what, in 4 years' time it's diminished. It's like, which world?
It's been in Nigeria. I've had conversations with a cross section of people, and at every level there is that sort of that rather dismaying quality to Nigerian public discourse. So some people talk about, oh, the judiciary has disappointed us, so we may go the way of Gabon or Niger. There might be a coup d'etat. And people are talking about this prospect with a sense of hope. And I say to them, have we forgotten our history with military regimes? We don't have a good history with military regimes in our country. And if you're thinking of the only possible positive outcome of a military regime is that all the centers, like the National Assembly, like the political appointees who drain the public treasury, will no longer be there under a military regime. But that simply leaves resources that generals, and even if it is junior officers who carry out a coup, they quickly promote themselves to generals. And so you're going to see generals and you're going to see politicians recycle themselves into sycophantic servants and stooges of a military dictatorship. So I don't think that the military is an option that we ought to look at with any sense of hope, right? And then some people will say, well, God is in control. God could decide to do this. And I say to them, you and I are both fairly devout Catholics. Okay. But I tell people God does not owe Nigeria and Nigerians anything, right? God has given us amazing resources, natural resources, has given us a great population, has given us a cadre of educated people, right? But somehow we keep going for mediocrity. We keep going for criminals. We keep going for knaves. We keep going for fraudsters at the helm of our political affairs, right? And then we turn around and say, yeah, God is going to clean up is going to deodorize our country, as it were, right? So we choose the worst possible elements to preside over our affairs, okay? Even the question that I was raising with some friends, right? Peter Obi's Labour Party energized the young people who came out and voted. In unlikely places, Labour Party candidates were elected into the National Assembly, into state assemblies. Have we seen a quantum of change? Have we seen a sense of transformation from these people in their various locations? Well, there is a state like Abia, where my good friend Alex Otti is actually sort of making some impact. And there is when you see people from Imo State now, there's a bounce to their move, to their movement. They have a sense that they have for the first time in a long time, a purposive and purposeful leader, right? But for the most part, I haven't heard a Labour Party member of the National Assembly who stood up to condemn the personal perks, the cars that they are trying to buy for themselves, and the absolute neglect of the issues that pertain to the fortunes of ordinary Nigerians. And I can tell you, being in Nigeria for going on 2 weeks, that poverty, the misery index is way out of charts, right? I was speaking to a woman who sells rice, and she was telling me that by Christmas, a bag of rice could be approaching 70,000 naira. In a country where the federal government pays 30,000 naira a month as minimum wage, where most of the states in our country still pays 18 to, if you're lucky, 25,000 naira as minimum wage. So somebody has to put together 3 months or 4 months of their salary to buy a bag of rice. Okay? That's the quality of desperation that Nigerians are trusting. And so the fact that we sit down and we think, okay, is God or the military? As if the military are not Nigerians, you see. Just like a lot of people put hope in the judiciary, as if the judiciary is not as corrupt as those who run the elections to start with, as those who run the parties, as the police and the security agencies that enable electoral criminality. Are you there?
Yes, you were breaking in and out, so I was trying to was slipping in. I'm sure when it's upload well, just
Okay,
because
I
of the way
hope
we're
so.
recording it. But the way it was coming through to me was like, but it's fine. I think I got most of what you were saying. So here's where me I start from. I'd always said Peter Obi campaign. I felt the key thing about it, and some people can sit down and disagree, and even based on my own reality of just the whole process, right? Can't even I could even disagree entirely. It doesn't matter with the Peter Obi campaign, but I just felt with the Peter Obi campaign, if Peter Obi got into office, there was very little chance that.
Whoa.
Oh, are
Okay.
you there?
Okay. I lost you. You said that Peter Obi got into
In
office,
and
and
out.
that's all I that's the last thing I heard.
It's
But I can
slipping in
hear
and
you
out.
now.
Yeah,
Okay.
it's slipping in and out. You
Okay.
can hear me now. Okay. So
Yes.
I felt with the Peter Obi campaign, there was a little chance that the question of restructuring Nigeria needed to arise. I didn't see a situation where Peter Obi would sit down as president of Nigeria for 4 years. And at the end of 4 years, whether he gets elected or not, he would drive back to Aguleria and sit down and be like, yeah, he did his best
To
without answering
Bagolo.
the question.
Yes.
Tuagulu, sorry, thank you. Without answering the question of, did you restructure the country? I don't feel he would be a welcome person back to Anambra State if he doesn't answer that question. That might be a fear with people, right? I just felt he's an Easterner, right? He grew up in the East and all that. Can you
Okay,
hear me?
so I've lost you.
Ooh,
I
slipping in and
can't
out
hear
again.
you. Okay, I
It's
can
slipping
hear
in
you
and out
now.
again. Can you hear
Okay,
me? Okay, yeah. So he's an Easterner. He grew up in the East. I'm not an Easterner. I'm ethnically Igbo, but I grew up out. I'm a Lagosian, born and brought up in Lagos. So my case would be different from him. He's unlikely to have gone back to the East without talking about restructuring of some sort. I don't know if you got me. Man, this thing is breaking in and out.
Okay, it's frozen again. It's
Like,
frozen.
do you get me?
Yes,
It's
now.
breaking in and out so much.
Do we
Man.
need to re-log in?
Do you get me?
Yes.
Okay. It's breaking in and out so much. I don't know.
Oh, boy.
I don't know whether we need to restart it or
So probably. I hope if I restart that my link will still work. But maybe we should try.
should try and restart. Let's see if it will
Okay. So let me leave the conversation. Okay. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you now. Yeah.
Lovely.
Okay, so it's clear. So I was saying, so with the Peter Obi campaign, I felt like if he won, that question would ha I felt, given his background, an Easterner, somebody that, straight up Easterner, born and brought up, he's going to go back to Angulu, and which is a different thing to be an Easterner than, I'm Igbo, but I'm not an Easterner. I'm from Lagosian. I was born and brought up in Lagos. Peter Obi's case is different, right? I felt that he would have to answer that kind. I feel a lot of Igbo communities, a good amount of Yorubas as well, a good amount of Middle Belt, a lot of people want the country restructured, sincerely do. And I think with the Peter Obi, they will have had a listening ear. And I think it will have been highly unlikely for the person of Peter Obi to go back. Now, and there are some other people, say it's an Otto Ezeribi, I hope Uzodinma, or Ojizokalo. Kalu. These are all Easterners who would get there and would not care. They would just shut down the conversation and continue as is. I thought that that was the best and the easiest way, short of since Obasanjo's third term bid, to restructure the country. That was my only card with Peter Obi. That being said, when we get to where these people start talking about, I said, I understand Nigeria's history with military dictatorships. It's not been great. And anybody trying to say Murtala Muhammad was good, FYI, I think that I kindly beg to. I think Murtala was one of the most genocidal human being in the history of Nigeria. Why people choose to, I get why I understand why some people choose to listen. for ethnic reasons, right? But I think he was the he's singularly on top of the pile of genocidal human beings in Nigeria. So military dictatorship hasn't been great. But I would lean on something too about that is that actually when we're talking with you know, Mr. Akinola, Richard Akinola, right? He laid that point out, this point out. In a military dictatorship, you have one problem. You have a singular problem. Doesn't matter how many people are in this military dictatorship, you have one, and you want this problem to go. To me, I'll take my odds one with one singular problem, being able to sway that problem one way or another, and fighting the problem to create a better Nigeria. Or a better space in what is Nigeria, a real space, than the situation where you have now is you have so many heads of so many snakes all over the place. There's no way of who you're playing whack-a-mole. Oh, let's wait for the next one coming is going to be worse, man. mean, at this point now, you've told the youths of Nigeria unequivocally, it doesn't matter what you do, go fake your these things. All these grammar people, this man did not, doesn't have an, doesn't have a high school diploma. We don't know who he is. He didn't, he seems to have gotten admission into Chicago State. Seems, quote unquote. I highly doubt that he was the one. Based on the legal case, he wasn't the one. But let's say he even seemed to have, that person didn't even graduate. The whole year, 1990, and I'm sincerely expecting the FBI to eventually and the state of Chicago to eventually get involved in this. The entire 1979 records of Chicago State University is missing. Just 1 year is missing. It's missing. Spectacular, man. Well, welcome to the Tinubu world, right?
Precisely.
So you're now telling a whole, and we just had a couple months ago where they beat up a young girl who went to pool print, who ended up with a printout that wasn't her result to enable her get financial rewards from it. We ended up with the whole country beating her up and a large segment of the population beating ethnical Igbo people up. Even though the same ethnical Igbo people are the ones doing the best, both state-wise and individual-wise in other states are doing the best in the same high school leaving certificate called SSC. Even though the top five states and then you add the rivers and other states where you have all those states are all Igbo states and even, you know, people were still beaten. And now you have a guy that can't even produce an SSC result, but you beat a little girl who in her young mind somehow, some way ended up with a result. Maybe it's a fault of hers or wasn't, ended up with a result that wasn't hers to claim accolades and claim financial rewards to try and go to college. With these financial rewards, she clearly seems to be a girl that cannot afford to go to college, and her best bet was to go out. Might have been. So that, it seems to be that her best bet was to go out and create get a this thing. It seems to be that was the case. You know, it seems to be. That's my own deduction of what I saw. A girl is like, what am I writing SSC for? Let me go and. After all, we all forge things in Nigeria. Let me go and forge this highest this thing. It seems to be. But whatever it wasn't a legitimate result. So, you know, we are now in this society where we're headed down this and I get it. Me personally, I will take the field. I'll take anything else. I'm not telling you military dictatorships worldwide have been good for most of them are terrible. But I'd rather take a Mustafa. I'd rather take the chances of getting a Mustafa Atatürk, who is the founder of modern Turkey. Knowing fully well you could get an Augusto Pinochet, who was not just a CIO puppet, but a genocidal dictator. I'd rather take the chances of getting a General Franco, who starts off being somewhat genocidal, but ends up keeping together modern Spain, than have this. This is headed nowhere, in my opinion.
Somehow, I have a deep, a fundamental antipathy to military dictatorships, as a rule. Part of it is that as frustrated as I am with the this thing that we've misnamed democracy in Nigeria, you know, because it's not democracy. In a lot of ways, then, for me, what we have in Tinubu's government is actually a dictatorship by a group of men and perhaps a few women who are not in uniform, but it's a coup. What happened in February in Nigeria was a coup d'etat, properly understood. Which is why, as you've noticed, I've never called Tinubu president. It's the same position that I took when Yar'Adua was selected president at the in 2007. I made an open proclamation in my column then that I was never going to call Yar'Adua President Yar'Adua because he was not properly elected by his own admission, even though he said he admitted that the election was rigged, but he claimed that had it been free and fair, had it been credible, that he still would have won, which for me was a typically stupid Nigerian kind of rationale, you know. And as I tell people, it's like somebody, a friend of yours, putting his hand in your pocket and stealing your money. And when you complain, they will say, "I knew that if I asked you for it, you would have given it to me. So I decided to steal it," right? So my own continuing opposition, I register my opposition by refusing to participate in calling Tinubu. I simply cannot say President Bola Ahmed Tinubu. He is Bola Ahmed Tinubu. He occupies Aso Rock, the center of political power in Nigeria. But I don't see him as a president. I see him as an interloper. I see him as somebody who has usurped political power. So military regimes, as a rule, are at best a holding pattern. The military will hold the pattern in order to offer a transitional program to a more meaningful, sensible, transformative political order. Then I can make my peace with it. But Nigeria has never had that experience. Nigeria has had a Babangida, who, I named him Maradona. And in the piece in which I named him Maradona, I said that Babangida, unlike the real football maestro, was stuck in the midfield and dribbling and dribbling and would actually dribble himself without purpose, a sense of purpose. And if you look at, you and I, pretty much agree that Obasanjo was an imperial president. In a lot of ways, Obasanjo was actually better as a military ruler than he was as an elected president, because he was an imperial president, when the occasion called for somebody softer in his instincts, somebody who could have encouraged an independent judiciary, encouraged a credible electoral process, who could have laid the foundations for meaningful takeoff of development in Nigeria. If Obasanjo has spent $16 or more billion, which he invested in the power sector, and we got the kind of mess that he left, basically a situation that remained unchanged, right? So Obasanjo was a disaster as an elected president, and it was under his rule that he declared that elections were do or die affairs, where the PDP pretty much took conquered any state that they wanted, with the, of course, with the active complicity of Maurice Iwu, a professor who tainted the office of electoral commissioner, even though, of course, subsequent successors to the office of INEC chairman have actually beaten his record of fraud and incompetence and ineptitude and so on. I would like a situation where there is organic change in Nigeria. I sort of see it. So instead of expecting God to solve our problems, which God doesn't owe us anything, never owed us anything, has given Nigerians too much, or expecting the military to solve the problem, I think that it behooves Nigerians to do, excuse me, perhaps what young people did in 2020 in the EndSARS movement, which was what they reenacted in electoral terms in February, right? I think that we're going to come that the most likely scenario, given the deepening misery in the countries, I will come to a moment where Nigerians will say enough. I suspect it's going to be spontaneous. It's going to be maybe one person who acts out of desperation, and then so many people will then rise and say, "We're no longer going to accept a situation where the men and women we sent to the National Assembly and the people who occupy office of president and governors and commissioners and so on, accumulate to themselves obscene amounts in salary and privileges, and ordinary people with their entire monthly salary cannot even buy a bag of rice. Just consider the absurdity of that situation when somebody's entire earnings for a month cannot buy you a bag of rice, which has no nutritional value to start with. Okay, so you're not talking about meat, you're not talking about tomatoes, you're not talking about vegetables and fruits, just a bag of rice you can't buy. Okay, it is an untenable situation, and Tinubu has actually compounded that situation since he came to office. It's like already people are talking about Muhammad Buhari in nostalgic terms. That's part of Tinubu's legacy, you know.
Yeah. Well, I look, if ever people would get up and it's not because we're all part of, whether we like it or not, it doesn't matter where we live, we're all part of the people, right? If ever people will get up and change, but I want to do something. But I don't know. The other day I saw a video of somebody videoing a army officer saying, "Hey, a coup is unlikely because Tinubu has been given the military Tinubu allowance," so you know, kind of thing. So, like I said, NSTAS was a disaster in itself at the end of the day because people got killed and people turned on NSTAS, and people are still turning on. There are some people I rather not name who are always cloud chasing on this thing with decent followings on Twitter, always turning NSTAS even to an Igbo thing itself, to be honest, which is really weird now, ahistorical. Really annoys me when I hear those kind of things. But I don't know. I see a society where actually you talk with people, you know, people are just waking up and moving around as best as they can. They don't really, there's a resignation to life. Let's put it that way. It's a resignation to life. And like I said, I'm not even going to get into the God conversations or you know, let's assume that people have this impression of this mythical God, which is a whole different philosophical and theological conversation on its own for me. But let's assume they have this image of this God somewhere that is just, which, you know, whatever. I don't know where they get that image from. But anyway, let's assume that image is there and this God is just sitting down there. And, you know, I think they are expecting this image of this God to come down and do something for them. Like I said, it's a whole different conversation, but I think it's just, it's a constructed image to resign oneself. It's a level of, let me get, it's a level of determinism, right? In two ways, I feel. Maybe one, maybe if you believe in curses, maybe we, our forefathers did something that we're now
We're cursed.
It's in another way, the philosophical way, the most philosophical way, right? There's the whole philosophical debate about, is there free will? Is everything determined? You know, it's a lot deeper and a lot. And I bring it up to say, maybe, you know, if you believe in determinism, maybe this is the way things are supposed to be for Nigeria. Maybe this is, there's a deterministic, it may or may not be a course, I don't know. There's a deterministic this thing. There are
Dimension,
three,
yeah.
there are three broad camps. You could say compatibilism. Some people believe that there's most people, a lot of people believe that. But the logical fallacy is that you're either going to be a free willist or a determinist. Compatibilism is a very interesting position to hold. More realistic because of the outcomes of either of the two. You can't be completely free will, can't be completely deterministic, but all of them are distance. But maybe back to the distance. Maybe this is just the way it's supposed to be. Maybe it's the way. So I don't know. At this point, I don't know. Like, if
No.
you're sitting down and expecting change from these people,
Yes.
good
Yes.
luck. Good
No. No.
luck.
I don't believe that that's the way it's supposed to be. I think that if you look at every sector, right? Every sector, Nigerians excel. All right. You look in the area of medicine around the world, you know. Nigerian doctors are, despite their poor quality, they the increasingly poor quality of education in Nigeria. Nigerian doctors are getting jobs in Asia, in the Middle East, in Canada, and so on, and they are leaving in droves, right? And they are doing well. You come to information technology, high tech, Nigerians are playing a huge role. You come to academia, you come to literature, you come to music, you come to films. So Nigerians are doing amazing things on the world stage. It's just that my sense of it, again, which is another reason that I have my great abiding objection to military rule, is that I think that in the years of military rule, that we had a set of military officers who went into the military because they lacked the intellectual wherewithal to excel in other civic vocations and professions. You went in the military, and suddenly you found these idiots running our country, which was awash with petrol dollars, and they just aggrandize themselves, right? Whilst presuming themselves to be members of the Supreme Military Council that had little or no wisdom or intelligence to their policies, because Nigeria had money so much at moments of military rule. Where you thought that even if all they did was to make massive investments in infrastructure, Nigeria would have been in a totally different place. So, and I think that that carryover effect of poor, ignorant leadership filtered into the political domain where you found the most intellectually famished Nigerians. Finding their ways into politics, the most criminal elements, people who had committed crimes in Nigeria and abroad came in and bought their ways into political office, right? And I think that part of what happened was that the educated people had a kind of disdain for what was declared to be dirty politics, right? So they stayed away, and it was people who were ready to kill for power, people who were ready to bribe for power who went in there, and they have had a stranglehold, and that's another sort of reason why I sometimes blame Obasanjo, because if you look at the people that Obasanjo empowered, people like Chris Oba, right, or Lamidi Adedibu, Obasanjo had such an imperial sense to himself as president that if he had wanted, he could have put people with the greatest intellectual and ethical funds and encouraged them and sponsored them to take to politics, right? But he found a different kind of crowd. And the point that you made earlier, which is that people are sort of have accepted, their fate, I think is true. But part of what's happening is that systematically over the decades, right, the sectors that used to articulate and catalyze and lead political opposition and activism have been neutralized. Talk about student unions, right? Which used to frighten the daylight out of corrupt political leaders. They are now absolutely suborned. They are now for buying and selling by politicians. You look at the labor unions, a lot of them are proteges of political, they're political sponsors. You look at the Nigerian Medical Association, the Nigerian Bar Association. You look at the Nigerian Union of Journalists. These are associations that used to stand for something. So Nigerians are dejected. Nigerians are coming to close to despair, even, but they are also desperate. But you no longer find those groups that in the past mounted a vestige of opposition, a vestige of struggle against. Against the tragedy in the country.
Yeah, it's a good point you make. I like that point about the quality of the version of Nigerian leadership, Nigerian military leadership. It was people who, I mean, from even Buhari himself doesn't have his school. He went to secondary school, but he doesn't have his secondary school
Yeah,
certificate.
precise,
He
precise.
doesn't have. We all forget that. And that's what we say, that this one at least can. Could at least produce classmates of his, even though he didn't, which is fine, at least was something, right? This one that is there can't even produce any real business. But what you say is the point you make is valid, that what you think of it, like if you go back, to the Western regional crisis, the Middle Belt crisis, there was the people that were fighting largely had a lot of intellectual people that were fighting. Awo versus Akintola, even though Akintola had a lot of thuggery around him, right? You had a sort of kind of a battle between a level of intellectuals and people who were just crude individuals. The coming of the military ends up tipping the balance, which you're right, tipping the balance into just crude individuals that just come in and start. And it's true. And they're just people that had no foresight. That's putting it kindly. None, zero. Go on, whoever. Murtala was people. When people start, which I've seen, I think it's just they are trying to own the ethnic supremacy. This thing, when you talk about Murtala as a good person, I'm like, Murtala is maybe the most genocidal human being in the history of Africa. That guy was genocidal to the core. I don't know what people, I don't know where people are. Even if you won't tell him what he did, genocide, you'd have to, you need to, based on the facts, concede that he was, his vision was ethnic cleansing when given the opportunity. So no, you know, you have these kind of people in power.
Even if you permit me a quick interruption, I think that apart from what the genocidal impulse of Murtala Mohammed during the war, that his more enduring negativity on the Nigerian polity was what he did to the civil service. That when he took over, he arbitrarily, without any rhyme or reason, retired some people. And some of them were the best officers, the most ethically committed officers, and they were just sent home. So civil servants then acquired a level of desperation because you wanted to put away as much as you could because you didn't know if tomorrow some army officer is going to say to you, you are summarily dismissed. So the civil service was wrecked. And of course, other military, what happened in our universities and so on. But I'm sorry
Oh
to
no, yeah,
interrupt
that
there.
was a
I
good
just
point,
wanted
though. That's a good
to make
point, yeah.
that point.
That's a good point. So it, I, you know, I 100% I see it's hard to look back on Nigerian military political actors and see the ones that there were some that were intellectually sound, but they were not the ones at the center of power. I would say this, I agree that your point is very poignant in terms of Nigerian military. It's very different from, say, the Atatürk that had a history with the Ottoman Empire,
That's right.
the waning
Absolutely.
of the Ottoman Empire, a Franco that had a great what they call it military distant. Or you took you took out you look at founder of modern Germany, von Clausewitz. These are people that had a great history of you know. What in case of von Clausewitz, Imperial Germany service, these were the highest of the most you know, these are people that when they got into politics, they had a pedigree to live up to. They had a prideful, very prideful pedigree to live up to. You'd see that in I'm not I'm going to repeat, but you see that in Germany. You see that even in it happened in not to get into to start getting deep into distance, but in Russia, where you had that pedigree, and then these guys come in, and then they take them out, and then it affects them during the war. But that's neither here nor there. But that point is very, very, it's true, because you'd see the quality of the individuals that come through the ranks, and then these are the people that end up supplying the political
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, you had an Abacha, right? An Abacha who was going to perpetuate himself, remove his uniform, turn into the nation's political leader, right? And we know that Abacha sent people to the Central Bank of Nigeria to cart away billions of dollars. Okay? You knew that Abacha allowed for the importation of the most toxic fuel into our country that was now so toxic that his regime had to throw that fuel away, right? So when you find people at that primordial level of criminality, you know, when a leader wakes up and the leader's entire being is concerned with how much do I stash away in my gut? How much do I eat of this national cake? Do I gorge myself on? Which is really the kind of military we've had essentially If you look at initially those who had money in the political space, these were people who were in the military who made this money. And how did they make it? They did not write great books that earned huge advances. They did not invent any political philosophy that they were paid for. They did not give, rousing speeches for which they were paid handsomely, like a Bill Clinton would give. No, they stole it from the Nigerian Treasury. That's what they did.
I mean, I mean, it's right. This generation, I don't know. I mean, I don't think they even have the guts for anything. But that era, yeah, absolutely right. These guys were, I mean, Abacha, even Babangida, that was maybe the smartest of them all, but still very limited in any kind of vision. He had no vision, to be honest. Babangida was scared of Abacha, and he said, like, well, Sani is. He, nobody ever mistook Abacha for somebody that had any, that had thoughts, any kind of thoughts in his head. He didn't have any. His thoughts were just to kill, and that's it. But I would say one thing about these guys compared to even the political leaders of today. I'm telling you that they're terrible. The history is there, and even when you go to founding of modern England, where you have Oliver Cromwell under military rule, by the way, which brings about more rights. It reinforces the Magna Carta of 12 distant 400 years prior, and it starts leading England down a road of a balanced political system, right? Oliver Cromwell too is from a tradition of military excellence, right? I think Sandhurst, if I'm not wrong. There's this tradition of military where you are really exposed and educated to the lives. You're expected to, you're officer in a gentleman image. You're expected to
Absolutely.
have this kind of pedigree, like not just some brutish thug that just wants to go about killing, pulling trigger anywhere you can find. Yep, you're absolutely right. But this is where I would say with these guys that I think they are a lot better than today's. I thought about that. I mean, they're a lot better than today's version of all the political leaders. Be it from Gowon. Gowon gets into is in their personal lives. We know about them. Even with Buhari, we were able to see he didn't finish. Even though people acted like he finished, he had an SSC, he didn't have one. We're able to see that. We're able to know about even their, especially their personal lives. Buhari was married before. When he was jailed, he comes out and divorces his wife. He marries Aisha, and he talks a lot of this thing in the other room and all these kind of things. Babangida, the same thing. You could tell. Oh, Miriam, his wife, used to be married to Bongo Sikwe. Comes in, they have four kids. We hear that he has kids here and there, but we know that he had four kids that were at the forefront, like two boys and two girls.
Oh,
Babangida, the same.
she was married to Bongo Sikwe.
It was Bongo Sikwe, yeah,
Marion.
the Benue guy. Yeah, Ben was, she used to be married
Okay.
before.
Okay, I didn't
Yeah,
know that. I did not
she used to
know
be
that.
married before. Yeah, it was Bongo Sikwe. Yeah, it was Bongo, the Benue music,
The
the
musician,
musician from Benue, Bongo Sikwe, was married to Bongo Sikwe. Yes. Then, you know, she comes in, they meet in Surulere, which where I grew up in. I take myself as a Surulere boy, born and brought up. You know, so they meet in Surulere, you know, they get married, they have four kids. Same way you go with Abacha. She used to be, Miriam Abacha used to be married to Yar'Adua family, the older Yar'Adua, I believe. She had a kid. In fact, I believe the child that died in this thing, if I'm not wrong, was almost certainly from that first marriage, even though he had the name Abacha. That was I've forgotten his name, Mohammed Abacha, I think that was his name. And they go on to have nine other children, right? Abacha, you know, reportedly, you know, he was hanging out with, which was not reportedly, that was a fact. He hung out with Jeremiah Osinie. People went and added spice to the this thing about Indian prostitutes, which was never really verified, but it was very, everybody knew Jeremiah
it's a good
Osinie.
story.
It's a good story. Everybody knew Jeremiah Osinie, Jerry Boy. He was named aptly named Jerry Boy for his bad boy ways. But we knew Abacha was that guy that, you know, hung around with the women. But he had one wife, 10 children. Gowon got married in the distant. Only Obasanjo, out of all the military people that we can't really tell. But even when he was in the State House, he did have, forgotten her name, he did have
Stella,
a wife.
Stella,
He had Stella,
Stella,
right?
who died,
Compared
you know, yeah.
comparatively, outside of Umar Yar'Adua, that we had Turay, these guys that are in power, you can't tell who their wives are in most cases. Their children. You can tell very little. Jonathan, you say, oh, you know, he had a PhD in zoology, But in terms of his personal life, you could tell very little about it. Most accounts, patients didn't even have kids for him. It's very hard to tell. Tinubu is, you can't even tell. So with that military, at least they had a semblance of, I think for a leader, in my opinion, I do not subscribe to, unless you want to see you're a Genghis Khan. And even Genghis Khan had a lineage that you could, even till tomorrow, Genghis Khan from the 12th century, till tomorrow, we can still tell his lineage because his lineage goes on to keep conquering. So even though he married so many wives, and I think 12, maybe 20% of Far East Asia, from Mongolia down into the Uyghurs and all those kind of places, are all direct descendants of Genghis Khan. He still had, he was somebody who had a family life of some sort. Again, you can be a priest or you can be celibate, but I think for a leader, you can't find, you can't find effective leaders where they don't have a certain amount of, I don't know what word I would use, a
Domestic.
domestic dissonance, you can say. Again, people had, it didn't matter, good, bad. Hitler was almost certainly a virgin by the time he ended up with Eva Braun, right? Stalin was all over the place, and by the time his first wife committed suicide, Voldo, anyway, by the time Voldo was his nickname. By the time Voldo's first wife commits suicide, he ends up with his kids, that's Svetlana, and his son, that Yuri, that ends up being an alcoholic for the most part, right? For most of these people, I'm not, I'm all I'm trying, I'm find, trying to find the words. I'm not saying your first, your personal life has to live up to certain ideals. No, I'm not saying that. But at least people have a sense of a sense of who you are on your personal life. To be a leader, you know, again, you could have had seven wives or whatever. The kings of Saudi, for instance, have multiple wives, but you tend to have a sense of their personal lives, who they are.
Yes, absolutely.
You know,
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Nigerian leaders, you can't even tell who is
No, no.
who is being. Yes,
And
of course.
once you have that kind of what one might call domestic hollowness, a lack of integrity at the domestic level. If you don't have people that you are primarily accountable to, your spouse, your children, a circle of relatives, I think that odds are that you are not going to be a particularly astute steward of a national space like Nigeria, or even a state, you know, within Nigeria. And that's the experience we had in the, you know, in our years and decades, really, of military rule, right? So you had this idea, this depraved idea of being action governors, and part of the action was they would dress early one day and rush to a secondary school to go and ambush the principal and the teachers who might come late, and then the military governor will order the principal to be frog jumped, you know, and sometimes to be lashed with koboko, and they will call him action governor, you know. So they didn't have a sense that you don't build a society based on having people, you know, frog jumped by soldiers or flogged by soldiers, you know, or even. One of the most laudable ideas of military regimes, the war against indiscipline, right? Where people were asked stand in line, you know, and so on. Okay, it's good, but you have not attacked, you have not tried to solve the fundamental problem, which is that bosses were not enough, that public services were not enough. The reason people rush, if somebody has to be in Enugu for an interview and you go to a bus stop and you know, there are 10 people in front of you. If you can, you're going to jostle and beat them because you have an interview to attend. But in other societies, you know, you have adequate supply of these facilities so that anybody who is trying to jump the line will feel ashamed, you know, because you have no reason, you have no rationale for jumping the queue, as they said. But, you know, so this whole artificial imposition of quote unquote discipline where people are told, stand in line, you know, and then you could stand in line for hours and the bus doesn't show up, or the buses come in and you are standing in line for hours before you can get to your destination. All of this points to a poverty, really, of the imagination. Anyway, so I think,
Yeah.
I don't know what your closing thoughts are, but for me, it last week was, I wouldn't say it was a shocking week for Nigeria because nobody was shocked. We would have been shocked had a judiciary risen to a certain nobility of vision in delivering a different verdict. So what they delivered was anticipated by Nigerians, not because it was judicially the inescapable verdict to reach, but because Nigerians suspected that we have a corrupt judiciary, we have a judiciary which has misconceived its mission, a judiciary that hearkens to technicality when substantive issues are at play. And so Nigerians just shrugged and they moved on. But I can tell you that from the vantage point of being in Nigeria, there was this profound sense of it's not disappointment. It is almost as if people yawned and moved on. But it's not a yawning necessarily of resignation. It's a yawning of there's nothing we can do at this moment, but we're not going to also pretend that something legitimate has happened. Which is why actually, there's a test for when something is right. Okay. Whenever the judiciary has issued a proper judgment in Nigeria, like when they removed Andy Uba in 2007 as a governor of Anambra State after 10 days or so in office, there was jubilation not only in Anambra State but nationwide. So you can see that when the judiciary gives a right judgment, the people respond. They give a judgment in Tinubu's favor, and it's like we are at a funeral. There is absolutely no celebration, not in the south, in southwest, not in Abuja, not in Lagos, nowhere. So the judiciary, members of that, the Supreme Court and the Court of Appeal know that they sold us a dud. So your final thoughts, please.
I mean, it's one thing if you had a flawed person who had some real outside. I don't think, this one has, like, just like exactly what you're alluding to. But you don't, you have, flawed is not even, doesn't even describe this guy. It's just, we don't even know anything. Just like I was trying to draw that contrast with the military people. At least you knew they were psychos and genocidal people and just rid of ideas. But at least you kind of knew, like, okay, this person is this. You have a family, at the bare minimum. Right. With these guys, you don't know anything. It's an imposition. People, it feels like a skit that people are watching, to me. And it's all over the place globally. People are taking a look at it. We don't know how bad it looks. But globally it's just this thing. And I don't know what comes. Like I always feel human beings have a point at which, something won't go on forever. I tend to believe that, but maybe this is the exception. I don't know. Like I said, maybe this is just maybe our forefathers
Austin.
offended somebody somewhere. I've got no idea what this is, but I will keep watching, and we'll just keep sitting here and trying to make sense of it as honestly as
Absolutely.
we can, and that's it.
Absolutely.
That's it.
Well, it's again such a delight, bright and early to see you back in America. It's already afternoon for me. I'm sure it's still morning for you somewhat. And but it's such a riveting conversation about despairing subject. But we'll continue to talk about Nigeria. We'll continue to exchange ideas, and hopefully we'll get it right. And even if we've been cursed, we'll find a way to expel, to nullify, to neutralize that curse. And so I thank you, viewers, for joining us again in this on this episode. And please join us again shortly when we come back to you in another episode. So thank you very much, Emeka, for this really exciting conversation.
All right, thank you. Enjoy
Thank
yourself out
you.
there.
Yes.
All right.
Yes.